Thank you, Gary, or old man Mac. You know, I know for a fact that that story is 100% true. And you're going to say, how? I read about it on Facebook. So it's got to be. Well, our next storyteller comes from Ohio. And even though we're officially in Kentucky, we're really sort of in spirit, if not in the program, we're in Cincinnati. We're in the host state some way of this conference. So let's hear it for Ohio and Ohio Tellers. Woohoo! Thank you for being our hosts. Yes, she has been involved in Central Ohio storytelling since 2000, the year 2000, which seems like a long way off now. But she appeared then at the Dublin, Ohio Irish Festival. And I know at least one other person in the room who would give a hoop hoop for that. What a wonderful thing to be Irish and a story. Well, that's synonymous, right? Irish and a storyteller. It's the same thing, basically. Well, her love of Irish traditions comes through, as well as her own modern humor and insights that she brings into her story. She's traveled the Midwest. And, well, if you have ever had any curiosity about what really goes on in an Irish wake, you might want to pigeonhole her after this showcase, because she will tell you, well, just about everything you want to know, and then even some more. Today, Kathy Jo Smith is going to share with us a story called The Giant's Heart, which is an original twist on some rather traditional themes. So let's please give it up for Kathy Jo.
Once upon a time, there was a mean, cruel, vicious giant. Now, he hadn't always been such a monster, the kind who would terrorize a whole kingdom. He had actually started off as a rather timid creature. You see, he was afraid of pain. And even a little farmer with a pitchfork would frighten him. But then one day, a traveling wizard came by and said he could make it so that the giant would never feel pain again. And with his magical powers, he pulled the heart out of the giant, put it into a leather pouch, and flew it off to the east, where it came to rest on the highest branch of the tallest tree of a giant mountain on the edge of the world. And the wizard told him that as long as his heart remained safe, the giant could be neither hurt nor harmed. What the wizard didn't tell him was that without his heart, the giant would be, well, heartless. Yes, now he was brave and fearless, but he was also cruel and ruthless. He felt no pain, not his own, or anybody else's. And so he felt free to snatch and smash and slaughter. And so for many years, the little kingdom suffered from periodic bouts of the giant's rampage, when he would go through and do as he pleased. And the king would send out his best and bravest. But as long as the giant's heart remained safe on that tree, the giant was invulnerable, and the little kingdom could only find rest if the giant wandered off or to another kingdom, or perhaps slept in his cave for a season, a year, or three. And the story of the heartless giant became the sort that people would tell children to keep them out of the woods and safe at home at night. And so it was told to one particular couple of children. John and Maria, they lived with their grandmother on the edge of the woods. For them, the story of the giant's heart was a story of wonder, and they would ask for it over and over again. They spent long days playing at giant hunting games and begging their grandmother to tell them more stories. And so it went. Now, years passed, and John and Maria were grown, and their old grandmother took sick to her bed. And she called them to her bedside and she said, "When I am gone, there is something you must do. Take the little yellow bird from out of its cage in my room. Release it and follow wherever it goes, for it will take you to the giant's heart, and so you will make your way in this world." John and Maria were startled at this addition to their favorite story, but they promised they would do as she asked. And when their grandmother had passed over and was buried, they discussed it, and they decided that John would stay at home on the farm, and Maria, the more adventurous of the two, would follow the yellow bird. If it should bring her to the giant's heart, she would bring it home, and the two of them would take care of the issue at that point. So the next morning, out they went, and Maria opened the cage, and the little bird flew once, twice, three times around her head, and then off to the east, came to rest on a branch. She followed after it, and then it would fly a little further and a little further. John watched as they disappeared, and then he went back to the house. Maria followed that little bird for days, for weeks, for months. It woke her up every morning with a cheerful tune. It sang her to sleep every night. And after a journey of a year and a day, she found herself on that great mountain on the eastern edge of the world, standing below the tallest tree, and high above her was that special leather pouch. She could not climb and reach it, but the little bird flew up and it batted against it until down, 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 down it fell right into her waiting hands. Maria could not believe it. After all these years, she scarcely noticed as the little bird flew once, twice, three times around her head, and then it flew to the south, for its job was done, its mission completed, and Maria would never see that little bird again. By the firelight that night, she opened up the pouch and looked at the giant's heart. It was smaller and lighter than she'd ever expected, hard as a stone, cold as ice, and she wondered about all of the things that had happened since it had flown from its owner. Now, back at home, John was lonely. Without his grandmother and his sister, well, he started going into town more often to find some companionship, and he found it in the shape of Susanna. Oh, they'd known each other since childhood, and friendship became courtship, courtship became an engagement. And within a few months, they were married and settled down on the little farm. Things were going well. The giant had not been seen for many years. The farm prospered. And just before their first anniversary, Susanna presented him with a baby daughter. They called her Marianne in honor of her absent aunt. John almost never spoke of Maria, but every night, as he came in, he would look to the dark skies in the east and wonder what was happening with his sister. Well, Maria was lonely now, too. She missed the little yellow bird. And so she found herself talking to the giant's heart. Now, at first, it was in anger of all the things that that miserable giant had done, but anger can only take you so far, and well, it really wasn't the heart's fault. And she noticed as she came down out of the mountain that it wasn't quite as hard or cold as it had been, and perhaps filling the bag a little bit more. She started talking to it of the journey ahead and of all the things she missed back home, the people, the places. And she began to realize that although she'd always made plans of what she would do when she got home with the giant's heart, she wasn't quite so sure anymore. Back home, things weren't so sure anymore either, for the giant had returned to the little kingdom. Day by day, he was smashing his way, a path of destruction, toward the little village where John and Susanna and the baby lived. They came into the village in hopes that in unity there is strength, that with a crowd, perhaps the village might be overlooked by the giant. But then one night, the giant crashed through the barricades, smashing, destroying, and then, horror of horrors, it reached out and was grabbing at people, and its hands closed around Susanna and the baby. John knew it was desperate. John knew it was useless, but he grabbed his knife and started to charge on one attempt to save the life of his family, when suddenly, above all the noise, a voice rang out, "Stop! Leave those people alone!" Everyone, including the giant, stopped. They turned and looked, and there, on the edge of the light, stood Maria, back from a journey of 2 years and 2 days, and in her two hands was now the large and beating heart of the giant. "Destroy it," John cried. "Kill it while you can." Maria simply stood there. She looked at the giant. The giant looked back. Carefully, cautiously, he set the mother and child safely on the ground. "Kill it now," cried John. Maria did not move. As the crowd parted, the giant walked carefully towards her. He reached down and plucked the heart from her hands. He clutched it to his chest, and suddenly a look of great peace and joy flooded over the giant's face, and then a look of horror as all the evils he had perpetuated over those many years came across him. And with one loud cry of anguish, the giant turned and fled into the woods and into the night. And so John and Maria were reunited. The village celebrated that night as never before. And when the king heard about it, he had a week-long feast for Maria. She had all of the companionship, the love, the warmth, the food that she had missed in her long journey. As for the giant, he was seldom ever seen again. But for the next 50 years, anytime there was a landslide or a tree fall across one of the king's roads, it was cleared up by morning. And no highwayman dared ply his trade, dare try to waylay a traveler in the forest, for they said that the giant had found his own way to recompense the kingdom. And Maria, she married one of the best and the bravest that the kingdom had to offer. But every year, she went out for a few days and camped by herself in the forest. And the people smiled and nodded, and they said that during that time, once again, Maria talked to the giant's heart.